Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to DearHoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to DearHoffman.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're in the midst of a fascinating discussion with Dr. Scott Scher. He's a medical advisor to Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. We're talking about hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which has incredible potential in treating a wide variety of conditions, not just diving injuries, not just carbon monoxide poisoning, or diabetic foot infections and ulcers. There's a whole gamut of conditions for which it may be valuable. And Dr. Scher is an expert. He's involved in investigating that. And also he has the distinction of being one of the few practitioners of hyperbaric oxygen who takes an integrative approach to that. Also sometimes combines alternative modalities with oxygen, hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And I was actually looking at some of the papers that you shared with me. One takes a look at the use of ginkgo biloba in conjunction with hyperbaric oxygen. Is that part of your integrative investigation?
Well, I think that particular study was done in patients with dementia or mild cognitive impairment. So I think what that kind of goes kind of forward by, it kind of tells you that when I'm looking at a patient that comes in my office, it's about an integrative approach. It's about looking at how can you enhance this patient's experience and quality of life without just using hyperbaric therapy. And maybe hyperbaric therapy is not appropriate at this time. Maybe it's something that they should look at in the future. I have a lot of different, you know, a lot of people come through the door, and it's really interesting to see, you know, what we can do to help. And I think dementia and mild cognitive delay, they're actually doing a study in Israel. The Israelis are probably the most prominent researchers in this field at the moment because they have a very large hyperbaric chamber in Tel Aviv. They're actually doing a study on hyperbaric therapy for mild cognitive impairment. And
for our listening audience, MCI, mild cognitive impairment, it's a pre-dementia phase of cognitive decline. It's pretty common. It doesn't always imply Alzheimer's disease, but it's a feature of aging for many individuals. It's almost a universal phenomenon, correct?
Right. One in three, I think the statistics I just read, one in three people, if they live to 80 years old, are going to have at least that, if not actually full-fledged dementia. So it's definitely a huge burden of disease, and I think there's been a lot of press about it, about Alzheimer's, about other types of dementia. The most common otherwise would be vascular dementia. So I think hyperbaric therapy has an interesting role in these disease states or these, you know, these processes that we get older. And I think one of the biggest is its inflammatory response. So hyperbaric therapy significantly decreases inflammation. And I think what, especially in somebody with Alzheimer's disease, I think what we know is that the neurofibrillary tangles cause a significant inflammatory response. And we also know that if somebody's already pretty, unfortunately, has lots of dementia, it's very difficult to come back from that. So if we can treat them early by using things like ginkgo, using alternative diets potentially, there's a lot of interest in something called the ketogenic diet for Alzheimer's, among other things, like actually for cancer therapy, that we're also using in these patients. And we're having significant success in improving patients' cognitive outcomes in our chambers and across the country and colleagues that I know that are treating these patients.
Well, indeed, it makes sense because if you oxygenate the brain, that's likely to do some good. Since you mentioned cancer, you know, I recently attended a lecture by Dr. Thomas Seyfried, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, and he's a big advocate of the ketogenic diet. And his belief is that in cancer, it is glucose, which is a component not just of table sugar, but also dietary carbohydrates, which fuels cancer. But in his research, he's finding that the benefits are enhanced when you put patients on a ketogenic diet, especially when they suffer from brain cancer. He has a remarkable series of cases with brain cancers that were thought to be inevitably fatal within 6 months or a year and, you know, multi-year survival combined with hyperbaric oxygen. So explain how that might work.
So it's really exciting work that's being done by a number of researchers around the country. Thomas Seyfried wrote a book. I'm forgetting the name at the moment, but a very good book, a very scientific book about the ketogenic diet and how we think it works in cancer. And there's a researcher in Florida named Dominic D'Agostino, who's a friend of mine, and he's been doing a lot of work on hyperbaric oxygen therapy plus a ketogenic diet for cancer. And they've had a couple animal models with significant improvements in their disease states. They haven't used this on patients in a trial way, although we've had patients attempt this and do this at clinics around the country, especially the ones I'm affiliated with. And the way we think it works is that, as you mentioned with ketogenics, we think that that's starving the cancer, right? We think that using a metabolic therapy that doesn't allow cancer cells to grow and to divide, which we do think and we believe, at least in this theory, and there's some pretty good evidence about this, is that cancer cells rely on glucose to do that. And if you starve it of glucose, they are now kind of, they're just unhappy, right? They're not functioning well. Maybe they can't grow. And then what hyperbaric therapy is doing in this particular respect is causing what's called an oxidative stress, okay? So hyperbaric therapy has a number of different roles, and this is one of them, which is most of our normal cells produce something called antioxidants. These are things that protect our cells from damage when they're given something like an oxidant, which can be any number of things. It could be a bacteria, it could be high oxygen environments, it could be sun exposure, it could be a number of different things that cause sort of oxidant stress. And normal cells do very well with this because they produce their own antioxidants, or the body has a way of protecting them. Cancer cells are not as lucky in that respect, or maybe they're unlucky for us, which is good. And what we think happens is that hyperbaric therapy is causing an oxidant stress on the cancer cells, preventing them from replicating and even, you know, potentially killing them in the process. And I guess what Thomas was saying was becoming a synergistic approach with the ketogenic diet. And so there's been a lot more, there's been a lot of interesting thoughts about this, and there's some companies that are working on ketogenic diets and ketogenic meals, and we're also working on the hyperbaric piece, and we're currently treating a few patients investigationally on these protocols. And it's very early right now, but there is some really good indications that we're going to be at least partly effective, in the sense that, you know, maybe this is part of the solution. Maybe it is. We're a little bit too early, but there's a lot of really interesting indications that this very well may be.
Well, how about with or without the ketogenic diet, the use of hyperbaric oxygen in conjunction with radiation therapy? Because it's been shown that
sure,
radiation is more effective in the presence of oxygen.
That's absolutely true. It's what radiation is dependent on is oxygen, actually. And what happens in a lot of tumors, especially those in the brain, that they're hypoxic, meaning there's very little oxygen in the center core of them, so it's very difficult for radiation to actually penetrate them. And what you can do is, there's actually a study that's being done currently where they're using hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and then they're putting a patient in their radiation oncology suite right next to it and giving them radiation right afterwards, because the thought is it can make it more effective. And there are some indications that's the case. But it's a little bit early to know, but especially for tumors that are very hypoxic, like glioblastoma being one of the most common, which is a type of brain cancer which is very severe. It's the type of brain cancer that I believe Bo Biden died of, and also of Ted Kennedy, pretty prominent people. It's something that really does kill people very, very often, and there's very few treatments that are very helpful. So hyperbaric therapy is definitely a piece of that equation, potentially. With regard to the ketogenic diet, or I should mention hyperbaric therapy by itself without the ketogenic diet, there have been no indications that hyperbaric therapy by itself without adjunctive therapies can be a direct treatment for cancer. What we think is more of an adjunctive treatment, as synergizing or enhancing the treatment effect of other different modalities, including chemotherapy. Actually, there are some studies that increasing therapeutic results using hyperbaric therapy along with it. That's probably because of blood flow and because of increased oxygenation and getting blood to further into the body, mm-hmm. and also with radiation and, you know, with the ketogenic diet.
And mentioned, possibly opening the gates of circulation so that the chemo agents can go deeper into the tumor itself.
Exactly, and that's what we're seeing on kind of on the other end of the spectrum in patients with radiation injury. So those that have had cancer and then now have these symptoms of radiation injury, and they can be anything. They can be radiation necrosis of the brain, which causes neurologic symptoms or nerve issues or weakness or difficulty speaking. We have lots of head and neck patients, unfortunately, that have had tongue or neck cancer or salivary cancer, and they have gotten radiated, and they have difficulty with their bones in their mouth and their jaw. And these patients do dramatically well in the hyperbaric chamber. Patients with prostate cancer that have prostatitis or really severe pain on when they urinate or when they have bowel movements and proctitis. And there's really no other permanent or long-term therapy that can really improve the quality of life of patients for radiation injury other than hyperbaric therapy. And we're talking pretty significant improvements, like 85 to sometimes 100% improvements in these patients. So there's lots of different ways we use hyperbaric therapy, as you mentioned, and I think it could be in the acute setting and sort of the treatment setting, but also in the recovery as well. And that not only happens with cancer, but with, you know, we talked about stroke, we can talk about traumatic brain injury, we can talk about other indications as well, but it's really about healing. And what I often say is that hyperbaric therapy heals wounds no matter where they are, and that's just part of the solution. But I think a lot of times that gets the message across that really we are healing in the chamber.
One of the very challenging problems in medicine these days is chronic Lyme disease, particularly Lyme disease where there's a brain component, where patients are suffering from encephalopathy. They have chronic cognitive problems, brain fog. They get lost easily. They're dosed with antibiotics ad nauseum. Among the investigational conditions listed here for hyperbaric oxygen therapy, chronic Lyme disease. What's been the track record of that?
So I think chronic Lyme disease is a tough one. It's a really challenging disease, as we all know, I guess, for those who believe it exists, and I'm one of those people. And I think what I would say is that hyperbaric therapy is an adjunctive therapy for Lyme disease in a number of different ways. I think the first one is that Lyme disease itself is what's called a microaerophile. And what that basically means is it likes to live in low oxygen environments. And what we're doing, obviously, in a hyperbaric chamber is that we're increasing the amount of oxygen in circulation. So obviously, Lyme disease does not like that. And then what we often see in the chamber because of that is the Herzheimer reaction, where these Lyme bugs will actually start dying. And those symptoms can be quite severe for some patients. My experience is that what hyperbaric therapy can do is really be a tool for a physician that's Lyme literate. And the best experiences that I've had is patients that have been seeing a Lyme literate physician and at the same time are using hyperbaric therapy in conjunction with possibly antibiotics or other herbal remedies that are trying to treat the Lyme, also with significant amounts of antioxidant support, and also really working on detoxification, because with the Lyme die-off, it can be pretty severe. Now, there's been one major study that's been done on Lyme disease by a guy named William Fife down in Texas back in the late 1990s, and he had significant improvements in his patients with Lyme disease. And there are a couple case studies, but there hasn't been a whole lot of data. But we do see these patients often. The key thing is a multidisciplinary approach, and I guess that's what I would take away from this, is that I do think hyperbaric therapy can be part of the solution, but it has to be done in conjunction with other things like antioxidant therapy, possibly antibiotics, definitely good detoxification, to really get an enhanced and long-term improvement in these patients. It's a really challenging disease, as you know, I'm sure.
Indeed. And speaking of challenging conditions, one of the conditions that really is a bear to treat, very, very refractory and mysterious, is something that used to be called RSD, reflex sympathetic dystrophy, which has been redubbed CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome, which is a debilitating mysterious pain syndrome, which is sometimes associated with temperature differentials in the affected limb, and just a weird phenomenon that's very hard to treat. Most pain medications just put a slight dent in the pain, but just don't really get to the bottom of it. Any data on hyperbaric oxygen in relationship to that?
And actually, there is actually some pretty compelling data that for RSD or complex regional pain syndrome, hyperbaric therapy can be extremely effective. And in my personal experience, I've had some dramatic improvements. I can think of one lady, she's in her 50s, and she had a wrist fracture, and her wrist was in a cast, and the cast was kept on probably a little bit too long. And then once the cast was removed, she had all these symptoms. She had on her wrist, she had temperature differentials, as you mentioned. It was severe piercing pain. It was so bad, they put her on a pain pump, like a narcotic drip that she walked around with. And hyperbaric therapy saved her life. It really did. She was back to functioning, and she could use her arm, and she had really no pain. Occasionally she would get pain, but it was very, very, very much less than it was previous. And that's been my experience with RSD. It's a pretty dramatic improvement. The only patients that I have that are really challenging are the ones that don't have localized RSD. The ones with localized RSD do very well, but there are these very challenging patients that have what they've been classified as having kind of systemic RSD, and that's a very difficult condition to treat. But for the localized RSD, it's a very similar mechanism that we've been speaking about. It's hyperoxygenating the nerves, allowing them to heal, decreasing inflammation, decreasing swelling. That's one of the things that hyperbaric therapy does is pretty dramatically in the acute setting is decrease swelling. And in the chronic setting, it does the same thing. And you decrease swelling, you increase oxygenation, you decrease inflammation, and you allow those nerves to heal. And it's pretty dramatic. And there are some good research data, not in this country, as you'd imagine, and I'm sure you're aware, a lot of the good research is done outside of the U.S. With these type of conditions, where they have more leeway as to what they can treat and how. And one of those reasons is that hyperbaric therapy is actually, in this country, approved for about 16 different indications, but in China, Japan, Europe, it's about 60. So there's lots of different things that they're using it for in Europe and in the Asian countries, and as a result of that, they have a lot more leeway as to what they can test. And they're using it in rehab all the time. They're using it in acute injuries, acute spinal cord injuries. It's being used it's disseminated throughout all different walks of conditions and specialties. And as you said in the beginning, I mean, it's all about oxygen. It's all about allowing the body's natural function to be enhanced by giving it what it really requires, which is oxygen to allow the body to produce energy and to heal.
And I was surprised to see among the investigational conditions, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, conditions that I'm often called upon to treat. How might that work? Again, it's sort of like internal wound healing, providing oxygen to areas of the gastrointestinal tract that may be a little ischemic, not receiving proper circulation.
That's exactly the case, yeah. Basically, wound healing in the gut and decreasing inflammation and probably changing what's also called the microbiome, which is the type of bacteria that are in our gut that are allowing the body to be inflamed or not. And I'm sure if you treat these guys, you understand that you also know that their guts have different types of bacteria and flora in them than somebody that doesn't have the ulcerative colitis and Crohn's. And there's some indication that, you know, maybe fecal transplants in these patients, maybe other types of probiotics, and those can be very effective for patients. Fecal transplants may be being a little bit extreme for most people, but in my mind, in 10 years, those things are going to be pretty common. So, but at the same time, what I think hyperbaric therapy is doing is selecting out some of the bacteria that may be more inflammatory for those that are less inflammatory, and they're also decreasing the inflammation on the actual intestinal wall, allowing the intestines to heal. And some practitioners, and there's some data out there, maybe for ulcerative colitis at least, that there may be sort of low-grade chronic infections that may be underlying, and those are probably being treated as well in the chamber, although the data is still new, and there's not a whole lot of randomized control data at the moment. But, I mean, they did a case report case series, and they looked at a number of different studies, and they took refractory cases of UC, ulcerative colitis, and Crohn's. And these patients, what I mean by refractory is that they didn't respond to any treatment, and they did dramatically better in hyperbaric chambers. So I think it's a part of a solution. And again, there are a couple different indications that hyperbaric therapy is the treatment. But there's a lot of others where hyperbaric therapy is an adjunctive piece. And this falls into that example.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the practical considerations here.
Sure.
Because some of these conditions are approved by the FDA and reimbursed by Medicare and insurance companies. Certainly, if you have a chronic bone infection that's poorly healing, you'll want to get oxygen, and that is usually covered. Or say you've got terrible radiation damage from, say, treatment for prostate cancer or something like that, and, you know, that is also covered. Diabetic wounds that are poorly healing, okay, fine. But when we're talking about some of these conditions that are termed investigational, it's kind of you pays your money and you takes your chances, right? So what does that entail? How many treatments are required, and what's
sure.
the out-of-pocket on that?
That's a really good question. I think the first thing to answer is, like, what is typical hyperbaric therapy protocol, right?
Yeah.
What do we do
yeah.
typically in the chamber?
What is a lot of patient experience? I mean, what
exactly,
does it feel like?
Yeah, so the experience in the chamber is not like going underwater, but it is like going on an airplane or a train where you feel that popping sensation in your ears. So that's the only thing you feel in the chamber. Sometimes when you're going down, you feel a little bit colder, meaning when you're diving down to the pressure, we use a lot of diving terminology because that's where hyperbaric therapy comes from. But so your experience is when you go down to the pressure, say you're starting at 0 feet and going to 45 feet of seawater, you'll feel that pressure sensation in your ears as you go down to that 45 feet of seawater. And when you get down to that pressure, then you don't feel any more symptoms at all. You feel fine and
you equalize.
You watch TV.
Yeah.
You equalize, exactly,
mm-hmm.
and you relax. And then on the way back up, you feel the same thing, and then you get out, and you're good, and you go home. Okay, so that's the usual hyperbaric therapy experience.
The duration is what? The duration?
Yeah, the duration is anywhere between 60 and 90 minutes, depending on the indication. And some of the neurocognitive indications, the ones that deal with the brain or the spinal cord, are usually 60 minutes, and those that deal with peripheral wound healing and peripheral nervous system are usually 90 minutes. Now, it's not just one hyperbaric session. It's a succession of hyperbaric therapy sessions, and that's because the types of changes that are occurring in the chamber really happen over time, because what we're doing in the acute setting is preventing tissue from dying, right? We talked about if there's blood flow, we can get oxygen into the tissue to prevent it from happening. But in the long term, in a chronic injury, we're talking about patients that need not only the oxygen acutely, but they also need the DNA to modulate, to the protein transcription to change. So the idea that we're regulating the types of proteins that are being transcribed off of DNA, and that takes time.
So you could sort of rev up the repair process. In other words, the DNA
right.
the DNA has the code, but the code
right.
may be just sitting there and not replicating the proteins that need to be used for repair and reconstruction of the body. So that what you get an induction of that process through successive treatments.
Right, and then what I mean by exactly, and what I mean by successive is that we're usually talking about therapy sessions that, as I said, 60 to 90 minutes in length. They're done Monday through Friday with the weekends off for, it could be anywhere from 5 treatment sessions to 40 treatment sessions. So it's a significant amount of time, and the length of time or the number of sessions, it really depends on what type of indication we're talking about. For things like chronic Lyme or radiation injury, diabetic foot ulcers, RSD, we're typically talking about 40 hyperbaric sessions done in succession over about 2 months' time. And the idea is to not miss sessions during the week, because there is some indication that if you miss sessions, treatment becomes less effective. And that really it's a very similar kind of idea to radiation treatment, interestingly
mm-hmm.
enough,
yeah.
but in the reverse, where instead of breaking down, we're building up, and it takes time to do both of these things. And so that's really an important piece of all this for patients and for people listening to understand, is that it's not a one-and-done sort of hyperbaric therapy
yeah.
session. Unless you've just had like a plastic surgery, or if you've had some sort of other injury where it's an acute injury and you're looking to get kind of revved up and get that healing process to happen quicker, and that's investigational, it's not covered by insurance, but we know it works because that's how hyperbaric therapy works, and we have patients that come in post-orthopedic injury, post-plastic surgery. These
mm-hmm.
patients don't need more than 2 to 5 sessions at the
mm-hmm.
most, usually
mm-hmm.
to get them to the next level.
So sort of like a touch-up kind of thing.
Well, just getting their body, allowing their body the oxygen it needs to heal and decrease inflammation
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and get them to that next step. And we see this with athletes. We see this with patients that are just getting regular sort of orthopedic procedures done. You know, I had a patient with a hip fracture that got it replaced and had a number of maybe 5 hyperbaric sessions, I believe, and she and her orthopedic surgeon was just amazed that she was better 50% faster than she should have been. Right.
Any professional athletes using it? You don't have to name names, but you know, I imagine they have a big incentive to, you know, say they got a bad pitching arm, or if they got a sore knee or sore back or something like that, they might benefit.
Sure,
from that.
We have a lot of those guys come in, and there's a number of different reasons. It could be orthopedic injuries, it could be brain injuries or concussions, and that's another thing that we're doing. And again, it's all investigational, but there's really some good data out there as to why we would use it and it would be effective, but. But yeah, the answer is yes, and in New York and across the country, we're treating athletes, we're treating sports teams entirely in some places too, just sort of maintenance daily as a weekly sort of therapy. But I mean, for the most part, that's the minority of what we do, right? Mm-hmm. The majority of what we do is the longer hyperbaric therapy protocols that really try to work on chronic disease, working on chronic stroke and chronic post-concussive syndrome, a traumatic brain injury, radiation injury, diabetes, and things like that. And that requires more therapy, absolutely.
And could we get a basic approximation of the cost of a course of therapy, say if you were to undertake 40 treatments, or is it per treatment? How does it work as a package?
We really try to work with patients, especially in New York and in New York City and Medford and Woodbury, and also across the country in clinics that I'm either directly or indirectly affiliated with, to try to make it affordable. And what we're also trying to do is advocate for hyperbaric therapy to be used more often, especially outside of the hospital, because as you likely know, Medicare has this big push to bring more therapies outside of the hospital, and hyperbaric therapy, we believe, will be one of those, because for the major indications for hyperbaric therapy, although there's the emergency ones, hyperbaric therapy is vastly less expensive in the outpatient clinic session setting than it would be in the hospital, as you'd imagine. So there's an organization that we're developing called the National Hyperbaric Association. There's others that are involved that are really trying to press, get this therapy covered as an outpatient, and trying to advocate for new indications to be put on the insurance docket, including traumatic brain injury and stroke. Those are probably the two next biggest that we're really trying to advocate for, with these veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and having severe injuries, and we're really having dramatic improvements in these guys if we can get them in the chamber across the country. So it's really part of what we're trying to do. And going back to your question regarding the price, what I can say, I think, is best is to call and to talk to them about what your situation is, and we'll try to make it work. We do our very best in New York and a lot of clinics. I mean, the range is gigantic for kind of cash-paying rates. It could be anywhere from somewhere like $100 a session in Texas to the greater metropolitan areas for being, you know, over 200, you know,
right,
just depending on where we are. And
well,
but
yeah,
I think
congratulations to you for getting into the island of Manhattan, because with all the laws about, you know, oxygen's explosive, and not a lot of buildings want to, indemnify that kind of, or underwrite that kind of operation. So congratulations to you for cracking the Manhattan market. You know, I have a clinic in Manhattan, and I'd love to be able to use that therapy, but, you know, my landlord would scream. So
we're the only freestanding, which is outpatient, non-hospital-based, hyperbaric oxygen therapy clinic in New York City. Right? We're the only place that has hard chambers that allow therapy at any dose, at 1.3 to about 3 atmospheres of pressure, but usually about 2.4 is the lowest we go. And we can do it, and we can do it both for the FDA approved and as well as the investigational indications that we've been discussing. And you're right, it was a challenge to get to New York City, but there's such a need for it. And, you know, we're seeing that every day in the clinic, and we're having great responses by patients. We're having lots of interest, and it's great that you're interested. And even though you can't have it at your clinic, you're welcome to send them over to ours.
I'd be very happy to do some case finding for you and provide it as an option for some of our patients who might need adjunctive care. So the final question is, you know, with New Year's coming up, is hyperbaric oxygen a good hangover cure?
I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before. I like that. The answer is probably don't drink as much.
Okay, you're not so much into frivolous applications of hyperbaric oxygen.
No, that's the thing, yeah. So I think that's a real key, and I think part of my profession has been under the guise or in the guise of a history of, you know, of snake oil, because yeah, that's how a lot of things get started, right? And, mm-hmm, and I think the pinnacle of that was this hyperbaric hotel that was built in Cleveland in the 1920s. It was like a six-story hotel of hyperbaric air. And patients, or people used to be able to go in there and just kind of hang out. And, wow, and there was probably good reason for them to do that, but there was no real data behind anything that they were doing, right? So I think it's very important that when you get hyperbaric therapy, no matter where you get it, that you're evaluated by somebody that's certified or that has knowledge of hyperbaric therapy. Also, that screens you to make sure that you're safe to go into the chamber. And,
right,
and I think, you know, the clinics in New York are probably the best, or one of the best examples of just a really solid organizational structure with physician and assistants and with a medical director and with really good oversight and lots of good consultants that help us from the UHMS and otherwise, you know, to make it a very, very, I think, respectable place. And really what patients need to be looking for, or people, everybody's a patient, everybody's a person, everybody needs to be looking for is just feeling comfortable there and making sure that they're going to be safe. And I think those are very easy to do, but it's also very difficult to do in some senses, in the sense that, you know, every patient should feel like they're getting treated and really that they're, you know, that we care. And I really do feel like that's the case in New York, and that's been my experience with clinics around the country, truthfully. I mean, I really feel like most people that get into hyperbaric therapy in open clinics do it because they've had a personal experience with hyperbaric therapy and have seen how vastly, vastly important it can be in the healing process. So I think we're a passionate bunch, and I think we'll be growing, and especially as Medicare changes its payment structure, and I think we're going to become more prominent even in the insurance world with diabetic foot ulcers and radiation. Sudden hearing loss is another one that I didn't mention, but that's another indication. So I think that the future is bright for what we do, and I'm hoping that we continue to improve and expand educationally and as far as research, and I know we will.
Well, great. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Where can we access resources? You yourself have a practice?
Right. So I do a couple different things, but I have an integrative practice that I work mostly remotely, actually. But I'm a medical advisor to Hyperbaric Medical Solutions, which is hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com. I also have my own personal website called integrativehbot.com, and I do a lot of advocacy and consultation directly through that. I also work very closely with Hyperbaric Medical Solutions and a number of different clinics around the country. I think the call to action is to, you know, go and think about, you know, what your underlying process is, whether your condition is inflammatory or is it chronic, is it radiation exposure, or is it a diabetic foot ulcer, and advocate for yourself and understand that this is another option for you to heal, and either to be a direct healing process or an adjunctive healing process. And to also realize that there is people like yourself that are talking about these things and are allowing people like me to come in and talk about, you know, things that I think are really cutting edge, even if they've been around a long time, and to really pay attention to understand that, you know, it's everybody's own path, but I believe that hyperbaric oxygen therapy can be very helpful for a number of different conditions, and it's something that I would recommend that people listen and look up themselves and go to my website or go to Hyperbaric Medical Solutions and learn more about.
Well, great. Okay, it's hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com, and your excitement is contagious, and I've got the bug, so I hope some of our listeners have, and I think we're going to see some very, very exciting developments in this field, and we'll bring you back for a reprise soon, because I think the research is just going to keep coming in. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Scott Scherr. It's spelled S-H-E-R-R, if you want to look up the doctor. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.